Hello, it is Lynchman here from Irish Funds. We are delighted to bring you the next podcast episode from our recent Irish Funds annual conference. In this keynote address, Matt McCormack, Chief Information Security Officer at BNY Mellon, will discuss building trust through cybersecurity, its unique challenges, the key to creating a proactive cybersecurity model that clients can trust, and how to drive innovation that reduces risk. I'm sure you'll find Matt's insights to be fascinating, and do keep an eye out for further podcasts shortly from the Irish Funds Annual Conference 2023.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. I hope I'm not between cocktails and everybody else, right? So obviously, cybersecurity is the boring topic, right? So nobody wants to talk about it. Imagine if everything we've done for the past 25 years is kind of turned on its head, and that was COVID. Right? We've spent years trying to build a hard, crunchy shell, like an M&M, right around our companies. And then COVID happens, everybody has to work from home, and we're trying to figure out what we're trying to do, right? Our entire security model kind of broke during COVID. So now when we look at today, we've learned, right? We've had a couple years to try to wrap our head around it, and then you get a new zing, right? And that new zing is your insiders, right? The people that work for your companies are 90% of your problem. That's where all the bad things happen, right? People give up passwords or do things like that. It used to be that we were fighting hackers from certain countries, right? They're trying to get into us. It was kind of a cat and mouse game. But everything has changed now in that your insiders, while they were always a risk, there's a new wrinkle. And I'm going to give you a couple situations, right? We had a situation where we had a software developer working for us in New York, working for a third-party company, being paid about $300 an hour. That software developer had a cousin in Pakistan who he was paying $10 an hour to write his code for him, right? So what he was doing is he was calling his cousin up on his phone, giving him his username, password, and two-factor authentication so his cousin can do his work. He's getting paid $300, paying his cousin $10. He's making $290 and doing nothing, right? Now, we caught him because he's employed in New York and he tried to connect from Pakistan. That sets off flags for us. But when you think about all the security controls we've done, we've tried to protect the company, but then all of a sudden, if somebody's just giving up their logons, what do you do, right? Now add another one on top of it. This whole concept of, it's called credential buying. Anybody heard of credential buying? Nope. All right, this is a new one, right? It's hard to hack in. So what they're doing, these ransomware organizations, and some of them actually have a 10 billion with a B Bitcoin wallet. So what they're doing is they're going after people in low-cost countries, right? Maybe we have a database administrator in India making $6,000 an hour, that'd be a great job, $6,000 a year. They're being offered, and this is, it hasn't happened to us, but it has happened to other banks, $100,000 in Bitcoin, untraceable. Just give me your password for one day, and then tomorrow you can change it, right? If you're making $6,000 a year and somebody offers you $100,000 untraceable in Bitcoin, that's pretty damn appealing, right? So as a security person, here I am trying to figure out all these ways to make it harder to get in, and then you've got employees in your own company just giving the information up. So what that means is we're having to change, because of COVID, we're having to change how we look at insiders, right? Traditionally, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at what you did, right? You came in on Saturday. You never come in on a Saturday. You printed on a Saturday. You never print on a Saturday. Right? You're doing things that you haven't done, and that sets off a flag, right? The problem with that is you've already done it. You've already done the bad thing that I don't want you to do, and so then I'm going to come and talk to you and say, why were you printing on a Saturday? All of our systems are set up to look for things that you're doing. Well, now in this new world where I have to worry about who has special privileges, right? In clearing, financial services, do you have initiate and approve authority to clear, right? Can you move money or securities? Okay, Do you live in a low-cost country? Okay. Now here comes the fun stuff, and this is where our game is changing. We don't typically look at the whole person. Now I need to start saying, do you have special privileges? Did you have a missed objective this year? Are you paid below market rate? Are you on a performance plan? Have you gone into LinkedIn and selected open to new work, but yet you're a super user or a privileged user, or you can move and clear securities yourself? This is different, right? As we start looking at the entire person, that's more complicated, right? Anybody see the Tom Cruise movie, Minority Report, right? Where the cops are going to pull you over on the street because of a murder you're going to commit, right? We need to make sure we don't go that far, right? Just because we can do something doesn't mean we should, right? We have to kind of border that line between creepy and secure, right? And that is one of the challenges for us in the security space is as the threat from our employees is changing, we need to adjust, but we also need to adjust understanding local laws, right? So you need to take some of that HR data, you need to anonymize it, and then compare it against, did you print on Saturdays? So as we're trying to think about, because of COVID, all these new things going on, the risk from the insider, we need to rethink everything we've been doing for the past 20 years, right? We've been building this hard M&M, but it doesn't work if people on the inside just voluntarily give up their logons, right? The good news is there's things you can do. Something called passwordless or anti-phishing, right? Has anybody heard of passwordless? All that means is facial recognition, biometrics, things like that. So if somebody wants his cousin in Pakistan to do his software development for him, he can't give him his face, right? Great, problem solved, right? Well, not completely, because there's certain countries, specifically here in Europe, where I can't store biometric data. So you have to come up with other ways for people to log in remotely, special keys, things like that. So it really is a bit of a cat and mouse game. And so for cybersecurity, as we're looking at everything we've done for the last 20 years, holy moly, we need to take a step back and rethink how we're doing business. Because of COVID, everybody worked from home. People started going to different places, right? You get on these Teams calls or Zoom calls with people and you hear seagulls in the background and you're like, are you really in New York? Right? I think I hear waves, right? Where are you? You find out they're in Florida or they're somewhere else. We don't have that geographic control over people anymore. So you used to have, you know, some of these rules and controls around if you're going to, you know, move money, if you're going to do this clearing, if you're going to do that, you have to be within the four walls of the bank. Or you have to be, you know, in a certain center. Well, because of COVID, we couldn't mandate that. Everybody was working from home. So because of that, you had to loosen the reins a little bit and let people start working from anywhere. Now what that means, rewind to what I was just talking about how the risk of some people in some of these lower cost countries, and now you've allowed them to start doing some activities that we wouldn't have allowed them to do before. So now we're adding this concept of friendshoring or re-onshoring, right? We at the bank, we're going through all of the roles that we've designated as critical and saying, you know what? We're pulling that role back to the US or the UK or Ireland. We're pulling it out of that low-cost country because the risk is too big. And so, you know, I would encourage you, you know, if you're having discussions with your security folks, ask the question, right? Have we looked at our roles? Which roles are critical? And have we said, can we get that role out of that country and bring it back home, right? So here within, you know, BNY Mellon, you know, I've got a big team. And, you know, we are in different geographic locations. And I do want to, you know, call out the fact that, you know, one of my largest locations is here in Dublin, right? And we are growing our team here in Dublin. When I talk about some of those advanced analytics that we're having to do around new insider threat models, you can't buy anything for that yet. You're going to have to use some of your data science and some of your developer people to try to figure it out. For me, that's being done here by my team in the Docklands, right? So understanding the new risks and understanding that as you look at some of these lower cost countries and say, you know what? It's great that we save a dollar putting that person there, but the risk is too great. Because if I have somebody that's going to offer $100,000 in Bitcoin to you for your credentials, if you're making $100,000 in a higher cost country, it's not that appealing, right? If you're making $6,000 in a low cost country, it's appealing. So there's actually a quantifiable security benefit to re-onshoring some of these roles, and not in any way saying all of them, but as you go through and look at the critical roles, the things that could bring your fund or your company down, who has the ability to move money, move securities, do these things, take a look at where they live, right? And I know for years, we've been pushing all these capabilities into lower cost countries. This new risk of ransomware organizations just going to your people and saying, here, $100,000, give me your password for one day. Tomorrow you can change it, your security people will never know. This is the new world that we're living in security-wise. And this is all COVID, right? This is how COVID has changed the game for us in the security space. We can't just throw up a bunch of firewalls anymore. We can't just throw up all these different things. Now, I'm not here just to say doom and gloom, the sky is falling, right? Oh, no, the sky's always falling. It's my job as the CISO to manage that, right? And to let my CEO sleep at night. But you got to rethink, like I said, everything that we've been doing for the past 20, 25, I've been doing this since 97, right? We've been doing this for a long time, and COVID dropped us on our heads. And so there's a lot of benefits, right? Everybody loved some of the flexibility of working from home. But the reality is we need to take now a step back. A lot of people are doing return to office, right? But if you're not doing 5 days a week return to office and you're still doing flex, where you're still able to work from home Mondays or Fridays or something like that, we still have to have two security infrastructures. I need to watch what you're doing at home, and I still need to watch what you're doing at work, right? So that is why, you know, sometimes if your security people are talking to you and they're like, you know, they're not trying to be a pain in the butt, right? There really is some new risks and some new ways of thinking. Now, the good news is, right, we have this friend that's popped up called ChatGPT, right? And it's going to solve all the world's problems, right? Good and bad, right? A hammer is a tool or a weapon, depending on how you use it, and how do we use ChatGPT and not create the Terminator and end humanity, right? And that is a legit, I mean, I think they're in front of Congress in the U.S., the guy who started OpenAI and ChatGPT said, yeah, there's a chance I'm going to kill everybody, right? To have the founder of ChatGPT kind of acknowledge that there's a risk to AI. However, there's good AI and bad AI. So at the bank, you know, we have about $6.5 trillion with a T cyber events every month. And using AI, we get that down to a manageable amount of investigations. So we've been using AI forever. The difference for us security people with AI is that we look at it and say, you know, a lot of the security tools I have, you have to spend years learning how to use them and how to ask questions, right? You can't just ask your tool who printed on Saturdays. You have to know how to type the question in. Well, if you can put a ChatGPT type front end in front of our security tools, you can just say, who printed on Saturday? Because it is able to translate that. So the concept of plain language questions, you don't have to know all the computer code, you can just ask it a simple question. I'm really excited about that because one of the biggest challenges for any security person is hiring, right? Finding people. Why am I growing my team in Dublin? Because the talent is here, right? And not just Dublin, in Cork as well, right? There's talent, and I'm going to hire where the talent is. If I can put some of these plain language questions in front of my security tools, you might not need 5 years of experience to be a security person. I can hire you right out of university because you can then come into my operations floor, sit down, and start asking questions. Who printed on Saturday? Who took a one-way flight and didn't check luggage? Right? Who did some of these things? And now bringing in some of these new security streams, right? Like looking at some of the HR data to try to figure out the whole person, right? Not just what you're doing at work, but what would make you a risk. And I have to keep reminding people, it's not because, you know, you as a person are risky. You're in a role that is risky. Or you're in a country who has laws that says the government can come in and grab your server legally. That's risky, right? We have to start looking at some of these locations. And there are certain hotspots around the globe, and we monitor these. And so there are situations where certain countries, I've moved all my employees to a virtual desktop, right? We've taken away the servers. We've taken away some of these things. We did that in Russia, Ukraine before it kicked off. There's other parts of the world that I'm sure everybody in here knows where they are. We proactively disable some capabilities in those parts of the world just in case, right? Because we need to make sure if some of these arguments turn into shooting, we're able to hit the button and disconnect those countries. It's important. If you're a global organization or a multinational organization, you have to be able to turn off different areas because of how interconnected we are now. And oh, by the way, the concept of digital nationalization, right? The idea that different countries have different laws. So the fact that I have to have an employee in Luxembourg specifically, because you can't look at data in Luxembourg unless you're a Luxembourg citizen. So because of that, I have to have a person in Luxembourg specifically for that. We have to be conscious of all the international rules, right? DORA coming up, GDPR. But then you look in the US, California, Massachusetts, there's different privacy laws everywhere. And so how do we make sure we're aware of where our employees are, what the local laws are, what abilities do you have? Can you move money yourself? That's that whole employee picture that we're trying to move to. Not just what you do on your laptop, but who you actually are, what authorities you have, and where you live, right? Because you could have all of those things in a low-cost country, which makes you a risk, and then put you into US, Ireland, UK, you're not a risk. Why? Because a $100,000 bribe doesn't go as far here, right? So this is how cybersecurity is changing. It's not about going and buying new tools. It's not about buying new hardware. It's not about, you know, awareness campaigns and all, you know, don't click this phishing link, which is important, don't click the phishing link. But it's figuring out what your employees are doing, where they are. Can that one person take you down? And that is different, and that requires a different level of investigation and awareness about what your teams are. And again, the good news is, you know, the security world, we're on it, right? Different people are a little bit more advanced than others. You know, I have the luck at working at a bank that's large, and I have, you know, lots of engineers, but I also have data scientists. I have an intelligence team, right? I've got my own red team that tests all of my systems. We go out and catch employees walking into, you know, Sainsbury's or Target with their badge, right? We go out and do all of that because we're conscious about the whole person, right? Because honestly, if I want to figure out who you are, I'm not just going to, well, sometimes I do, but I'm not just going to call you out of the blue. I'm going to go on LinkedIn, see you work at BNY Mellon, see you work in the digital asset crypto team that we put together. Then I'm going to go on your Facebook page and see that your kids go to St. Mary's High School. Then I'm going to send you an email that says St. Mary's High School vacation schedule, and you're going to go, oh, that's legitimate. Let me open that. Boom, gotcha, right? This is the level of targeted attacks that go on, right? And it's going to go on for you or your CEOs or the different executives at your bank because it works, right? I don't need to send an email to a million people. I'm going to do a little bit of research on you and send you something that looks really legitimate because I did a little bit of research on you. And then I got you, right? So everybody needs to be kind of taking another look. Where are my people based, right? What authorities do they have? Maybe I only want people in Dublin, in the building, to be able to do this action. Take a look, right? There's a million things I could talk about security, but I did want to talk specifically about how COVID changed everything for us. And it's not completely back to normal yet, but we're getting there. But the fact that everybody went home and everybody had to have the ability to do all these actions that you didn't have to do changed things for us. So hopefully this will help you kind of kick off maybe some discussions with some of your own security people, right? We're nice people, come and talk to us, right? Typically nobody wants to see their phone ring coming from me, right? Or if you see the security person walking down the hall at you, you're going to turn around and walk the other way, right? We really are trying to help, right? Because for us, it's all about risk management, right? It's not security. There is no security anymore. I'm an insurance salesman, right? For as much money as the board will give me, I can buy down risk. But I can't promise you the number is zero. I can't say nobody will ever get in, right? What I can say is if they get in, I'm going to handle the incident well because we've practiced and we've rehearsed and we know what's going on. But I would encourage you to, you know, spend a little time with your security folks. Understand the type of employee analysis they're doing and say, hey, you know, maybe we need to look a little deeper, right? How many of my, you know, my clearing people are on a performance plan? Any of them? How many of them are in a super low-cost country? Any of them? Doesn't mean the person's bad, just means they're in a higher risk, right? People take that stuff personally. I'm not a risk. We're not saying you're a risk. We're saying the factors around your job are a risk. And then you're not trying to look at 50,000 people. Maybe you're looking at 1,000, right? That's how you get down to a manageable number. So have those discussions. It's you know, it's fun. We security people are fun, right? Come and talk to us. So only had 20 minutes. I sincerely appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you guys today. You know, I'll be around. If you have any questions, come and talk to me. But also, you know, it's if you have anybody, we're about 5 million people short in the industry. So, you know, I get asked all the time, you know, hey, I have a cousin, nephew, son, daughter. Should they get into cybersecurity? Oh, absolutely. Right? And I will say, right, as I do my plug for the industry, right, good for everybody, you don't have to be a computer scientist or an engineer to be in cybersecurity, right? And people say, why? Well, if you're, like, how many people are accountants, finance majors, right? That should be easy. That should be, like, most of the people in here, right? Somewhere, right? They make fabulous auditors. We do a lot of auditing and a lot of compliance in cybersecurity. Any psychology people? No? All right. Well, if you do know psychology people, human factors. When I'm doing training and trying to convince people not to click on something, no matter what I do, 10% are always going to click on it, right? Psychology people understand how to talk to somebody so they won't click, right? So my training department, I like psychology people, right? Music majors make some of the best forensic investigators. Why? Because their brains think differently and they're curious when they see something that doesn't make sense and they want to go deeper. So there's lots of room in cybersecurity for non-engineers, non-computer science people. So if you know people that are, you know, in university and like, I just don't know what I want to do, tell them to think about cybersecurity, right? Thank you, everybody.